Well, thank you all for having me again this year. I'm really pleased to be with you. It's really been quite a year in healthcare. As you all know, about a year ago when we were last together, the Obama administration had actually successfully passed its healthcare reform. And this is truly an incredible period of time, as you know, for the United States. And so the bill was passed just about a month before last year's conference. It went into effect 6 months later, so this last September, the bill went into effect, and it's truly impacting every single one of your companies and every single person in this room as far as not just your workload, but really how you're thinking about your healthcare benefit. And then another remarkable thing happened during the course of the year, and that is we had the elections in November. And all of a sudden, you went from somewhat certainty of what the Obama healthcare bill had in it to total uncertainty, because now you had shift of control of the House, but more importantly than just the House, you had shift of control in many, many states. And so now you had the states more involved, you had the House more involved, and now you have tremendous uncertainty in healthcare. But then there are certain things that also happened last year that cleared things up. We are no longer in charge. Watson has taken over. And so human life form no longer is going to lead us forward. And in fact, as you know, the news only got worse as the year went on. This guy is in charge. So what I'd like to do over the next few minutes is actually walk you through the outcomes report and actually just hit on the highlights, because as you know, it's a little too much to go through in 30 minutes, and then really draw out for you what we really think are the breakthrough moments, the true aha moments for us this year. But before I do that, I want to go back about 150 years, and this picture is a picture of Sir William Osler. And many of you in this room probably know who he is, but many don't. Sir William Osler is actually considered the godfather of medicine in the United States. He was the first and founding chairman of the Department of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University in 1892. And Osler was my hero in medical school for a couple reasons. Not only do I really believe in what he taught, but he also shares my birth date, and I thought there was something magical about that. But Osler was actually, what was truly remarkable about Osler and what he did to revolutionize care in the United States is something that we've actually lost over the last 100 years. And it was that quote that was in your invitation, but it's also here on the slide, and that is, the good physician treats the disease, the great physician treats the patient. And as you know, over the last many years, we have developed a system of healthcare that is spectacular at treating diseases, especially in the United States. We treat cancer really well. We treat heart failure really well. The problem is we don't treat patients particularly well. And when you lose that concept of being patient-centric instead of disease-centric, what happens is that leads to a tremendous amount of waste. And so Osler was actually the first person to recognize that it takes more to train a physician than just teaching him about disease. And so he was actually the first physician in the United States that tried to revolutionize the training of medical students. So prior to Osler's time, this is how medical students were trained. And this is actually Osler in the amphitheater. And so they're in a room similar to this, not a whole lot different. The students are removed from the patient. This is as close as they get to the patient. And the great professor stands at the bottom of the amphitheater, and he teaches them about disease. But at no time does the student ever interact with the patient. And so Osler's frustration was this was not going to work. And so Osler was the first one that recognized that he actually had to take the students out of the amphitheater and to the bedside. And he developed this principle, and what you see are four pictures here. The first phase of it was observation. He would listen, he'd talk to the patient, he would look at the patient, he would observe the patient. The second was called palpation. Auscultation. He would listen with his stethoscope to hear the patient. The third was palpation. He would touch the patient, examine the patient. And then the fourth phase of this was contemplation. So observation, auscultation, palpation, and contemplation. And he would drag the students around with them to do this. And it was truly novel for the United States. No one had ever done this before. And in fact, he went further to revolutionize the system. He actually started internships and residencies. Before his time, this was totally unheard of. And so what is intuitive to you, you sit here and go, I can't believe someone didn't come up with this. How could this be considered a breakthrough? This is so obvious. Yet here we are, just a little over 100 years ago, and we were not letting students visit with patients. And in fact, the closest a student ever got to a patient was in the autopsy suite, and it was always too late when they were there. And so the bottom line was, he truly revolutionized healthcare, and we benefit from it. But unfortunately, we have lost our way. We have lost our learnings from Osler because, as he said, it's much more important to know what sort of patient has a disease than what sort of disease a patient has. And because we've lost our way, because we've become so disease-centric, especially in this country, we have this explosion of waste that Larry talked about. And so as you heard Larry already steal my punchline, there's about $403 billion of waste in the United States, and it falls into three big buckets. And I want to walk through these. Now remember, we define waste as any time you're spending a dollar more and not getting any additional value. And there's in the pharmacy benefit, as you know, there are three big areas, three buckets this falls into. The first, worth about $88 billion, is mix. That is when you're paying more for a drug when there's a therapeutically equivalent drug in the marketplace, be it a low-cost brand or a generic, you're wasting on mix. And so that if I could wave my magic wand and get everyone to move to the lowest cost drug, I could improve healthcare or at least keep it the same and save the country $88 billion. The second bar is channel. This is actually when you're either at a retail drugstore and there's a cheaper pharmacy available to you close by, or you're on a chronic medication, you're getting it at retail when it can be moved to mail, or you're on a specialty drug and you're not getting the discounts of a specialty pharmacy and not at specialty pharmacy. About $8 billion there. And then by far, in a way, the biggest bucket is adherence. This is when a patient is not taking their drugs as prescribed by their provider, be it their doctor, their nurse, or whoever it is, worth over $300 billion. Now, the other thing I want you to understand is we own a mail order pharmacy. Many of you saw it yesterday. We shamelessly believe in the value of this. And what I want to point out is the following. While it's only $8 billion to move to that correct channel, when you move a script from retail to mail order, I have many days to deal with that script. I don't have a patient standing across the counter that needs that drug right away. And so I can actually call the doctor and get that patient to that low-cost brand or generic and save the country $31 billion of that mix right off the top. It happens seamlessly. Likewise, because the patient is getting the refills only 4 times a year instead of 12 times a year, but just as importantly, it's just showing up at their house. They have to put almost no effort into it. I can actually get an additional $50 billion worth of adherence to happen automatically. And Brian Seiz tomorrow will actually show you the data of how this works. But patients who are getting their prescriptions through mail order or through specialty pharmacies are more adherent than those that get it at retail. And so the reality is that channel, while it looks the smallest bucket, actually grows to just south of $90 billion on an annual basis because of all these additional added values. And then when you add in the dispensing accuracy, which we don't even know how to quantify, remember that at mail order, and those of you who saw it yesterday, it's Six Sigma accurate. Because it's a manual process at retail, the chance of you having the wrong pill in the bottle is about 1.7%. The patient rarely knows what's actually supposed to be in that bottle. They can't identify if they got the wrong drug, be it the wrong dose or the wrong actual prescription. And so what happens is you and the patient pay for those untoward events, those hospitalizations or doctor visits because a medication isn't working. And I don't even know how to quantify the cost of that. The point being is the channel is actually quite important when you consider it, even though the bar looks quite small. Now, what's happened over the last year to drug spend? Many of you have been in this business a long time. You go back to over to the early 2000s when you know that we were having double-digit increases year over year with drug prices. Now, let's make sure we all understand. Trend is not inflation. Trend is when you take a category, for instance, diabetes, and you look at the spend for diabetes 1 year over the next. So inflation, while always a big factor, the prevalence of treatment of that disease, the intensity which you treat it, the mix of drugs, all add into that. In 2010, that number is 3.6%. It is held well in check. That's the good news. And when we break it down to the traditional oral solid drugs, these are the drugs for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, it's even lower, 1.4%. We have been having a great era where we've been able to hold traditional drugs in check. But as you know, the storm clouds are out there. That's represented by specialty drugs. The increase for the second year in a row was 19.6%. And unfortunately, we don't see any relief for that anytime in the near future. So the combination of the two, because traditional drugs still represent the vast majority of fills, over 98% of the fills, that pulls it down, it's 3.6%. Now, despite what you've read in the newspapers, and every pundit has told you, you all are doing a spectacular job of protecting your membership. When you look at what they're paying for copays, be it overall, for the traditional drugs, even the specialty drugs, you all have worked very hard to protect your patients, your members. So actually, the overall cost, the average cost of a prescription copay went down last year. It's down to $12.15 on average for a prescription. Yet that's not what you're reading in the newspapers. And when you look at the traditional oral solid drugs, it's down to under $12. Now again, we've already warned you, the problem's coming on the specialty side. The specialty copay has gone up on average just under $55. Still phenomenally well controlled on average, but very worrisome for the future. And if you break it down by percentages, we are now below 20% for the average copay. It's no longer 80%, 20%. It's actually now below that. It's 19.3%. If you look at it for the traditional drugs, your members are paying on average about 22 cents on every dollar. But for your specialty drugs, you've really held it in check. They're paying the same they did the year before, 2.6%. And so you all have taken on additional burden to take care of your employees, even at this time when it's been very difficult on your companies, and there's been a lot of talk about cost shifting. When it comes to the pharmacy, you have not cost shifted. And so the copay actually fell and the percent was down. Now, what's happened on the inflation side of the equation? And you've read a lot about this. The pharmaceutical manufacturers have fewer new drugs coming to the marketplace. They don't have a choice. They have to manage the life cycle of their products. You'll hear Susan Lane talk about this tomorrow, but brand inflation is almost 10% now, 9.7%. And instead of them taking their one price change a year, this last year we've seen drug companies that take two price changes, three price changes, even four price changes in a single year. So that's the bad news. The good news is on the generic side. The generic side continues to be wildly competitive. And the price of generic drugs went down by 10.2%. If you think about the delta, if you think about that gap, if you're not taking advantage of a generic when one's available, that gap grew by 20% in the last year alone. And so the cost of failure has never been higher. And so we have to really figure out how are we going to get patients to take advantage of it if the value proposition is so powerful. Now, you remember that, and you'll see in the drug trend report as you read through it, we break down trend into two major categories. One is market factors. These are things you have very little influence on. And there are those behavioral factors in which you and I have a tremendous influence on. And so if we look at the overall drug trend of 3.6%, so if we go back to the overall drug trend, what you can see are there's two major drivers here. One is inflation for those drugs, up 4.2%, But the other major driver is a lot of drugs continue to lose their patents. You're going to continue to see this year over year in the next several years. And that's what's holding this in check, because we're able to take advantage of the mix to keep these in check. And so it's only 3.6%. And we'll be blessed with that over the next several years. But we have got to pay attention to those factors that we can control on the behavioral side. If you look at the traditional oral solids, it's the same story. The inflation was 3.5%. Again, patent expiration allowing us to take advantage of drug mix continues to hold that in check. This is not the case always. Now, here's some of the storm clouds that even occur on the traditional side. And this is data all of you have seen time and time again. Our country, unfortunately, continues to gain weight. The cost of calories continue to go down. The cost of exercising actually continues to go up. And so we now have a situation where one-third of our children, people ages 2 to 19, one-third of our children are either overweight or obese. This is a really scary pipeline of employees that you're going to have coming online over the next 10 years. And of your current employees and retirees, those of the adults, two-thirds of the country is either overweight or obese. This is truly a crisis, and if you look at what happens, so this is a map from the CDC that looks at where obesity is, and as you can see, phenomenal concentration in the southeast United States and the eastern part of the United States, but also some areas in the intermountainous regions. If you overlay that with a map of diabetes, which we know is attributable to obesity, they almost look identical. So the diseases that are associated with obesity are going to be coming at you like a freight train. So not only is the freight train arrived, but there's an additional cars of these people that are going to keep coming over the next several years, because this is what our children look like. And if you look at how it links to the drug spend, if we look at those categories, we continue to see huge spend in cholesterol, huge spend in diabetes, huge spend in cardiovascular disease. Now, what's happening with drugs going generic actually really impacts this. And so for high cholesterol, as you know, a lot of the drugs have already gone generic. Lipitor goes generic at the end of this year. And so you can really hold down the trend despite the increased number of patients that need to be treated. In diabetes, we're not as fortunate. Not as many of these drugs are going generic. There's not going to be as many opportunities to switch people. And so the trend in diabetes is now 12.5%, double-digit increase year over year. And that's going to continue. For cardiovascular disease, this is the antihypertensive drugs and others, diuretics. As you can see, almost all those are generic. So despite a rapid growth in cardiovascular patients, we're able to hold those in check. It's very flat. Now, there's two other categories I want you to watch out for. There's good news and bad news here. The good news is the ulcer category. Again, the vast majority of the products or the products you need have gone generic. The trend for the ulcer disease is down 14% year over year. You remember a couple years ago where this trend was actually phenomenally high because the PPIs were truly revolutionary medications, but as many of them have gone generic, this whole class is getting very inexpensive. In fact, as you know, much of it's even going over the counter. The flip side is attention deficit disorder. Interestingly, there's this phenomenal geographic variation here. So for those of you who have companies that are in the eastern United States, this is epidemic. Interestingly, this same activity in the western part of the United States isn't considered a disorder. It's actually considered normal, and they don't treat near as much. So the treatment rates are actually much different. But the increase in spend is phenomenal, 17% year over year, and this is going to continue to grow as the epidemic spreads across the Mississippi. So you should consider yourself safe in St. Louis, but only temporarily. Specialty. Totally different story. The specialty spend, as we told you, 19.6% year over year. It's being driven both by prevalence. As we live older, we are on more and more of these medications for multiple sclerosis, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, and other diseases. And the inflation on these drugs is unbelievable. Even the old drugs in multiple sclerosis, the manufacturers are taking price increase after price increase. And so these three categories, inflammation, multiple sclerosis, and cancer actually represent 2/3 of specialty spend for just these three categories. And when you consider how few patients you actually have in these categories, and how many it's going to grow by, this is really the storm clouds of the future. And you have very few options as far as behavior here to help you out. So you all know we have worked very hard over the years to get a biosimilar pathway so that we can have generic versions of these biologic drugs. As you know, the pathway is really mucked up in healthcare reform. And so we don't see generic versions of these drugs coming online for several more years. And so you're going to continue to have to fight and manage really closely every patient with inflammatory disease, multiple sclerosis, and all the other diseases. Because here's what's happening. If you take the top four categories of spend on your traditional side, that is high cholesterol, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and depression, and you stack up specialty spend to it, this is what you're paying on the pharmacy side today. It's worth almost half of it. But what most of you don't recognize is that on the medical benefit, you're buying an equal number of these drugs. This category of specialty drugs, if you lump in the medical and the pharmacy, is bigger than the top four traditional drugs. This is the storm clouds that are in the future. And to make this point even further about the importance of the medical and why you gotta treat the patient and not the disease, is that if you look at the growth in the pharmacy, we've done a great job of controlling this. As you know, we even have step therapies in specialty now. But if you look on the medical side, almost no control at all. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. And when you ask for reports, what am I spending, you're not even able to get those reports. And it's getting more complicated because it's also leaving the office. It's spreading out into infusion centers, into hospitals, into other clinics and specialty settings. And so you can't actually even corral it very effectively. And so you're going to have really important physician strategies, especially in specialty medications. The physician has a tremendous sway here, and so it's not good enough just to influence the patient. You have to be able to influence the doctor if you're going to be successful here. And you're going to hear in the breakout sessions, both for the traditional drugs with Heather Sundar, Adam Costner, and the specialty drugs with Matt Totterdale and his team, how we have to incorporate the physicians into our thinking if we're going to be successful, especially with these really high-cost medications. Because if we're going to do what Osler said, and we're going to actually treat the patient and not the disease, we have got to take a more holistic approach. We've had for a long time specialty benefits on the pharmacy side. And as you know, several years ago, we added the specialty pharmacy. So not only could we do the step therapies on specialty, and not only could we dispense and actually work on adherence through our specialty pharmacy, but it's very clear to us that we have to treat the disease regardless of where it's at, doctor's office or in the pharmacy. And so we now have specialty benefits management. So it allows us to treat the disease no matter where it occurs. And you're going to have the same philosophy if you're actually going to control your specialty spend going forward. Now, I'm going to change directions and finish up with the following. When you have time and you look at the drug trend report, you're actually going to see something which we really think is a breakthrough. And it's a breakthrough in the following way. We have been working on the behavioral sciences for years, as you have, and you've heard everyone in healthcare, and you've gone to lots of symposiums, and everyone's talking about, oh yes, behavioral science, really important. We got to get consumer behavior. In fact, as your vendor, I've come up with even better education, better copay designs, and we have solved this. And as you know, you're sitting there going, well, it sounds right, it doesn't work. The pieces just haven't all come together. And what we believe the breakthrough is we have a study in this year's drug trend report that truly brings those pieces together. It finally explains what you're seeing in the marketplace and why some of your programs don't work very well and other programs work really well. And we believe that if you actually put this into practice, we can get back out of the system 1/3 of that $403 billion. That we can save this country about $143 billion if we could just do a few simple principles. And here's what happened. we would actually see patients. So, you know, we really think this value proposition of generics or low-cost brands is phenomenal. Everyone should be just running to it. And we've beaten you all up with the value of mail, and mail's so important, and we think, you know what, everyone should be running to it. But in fact, they don't. You seem to have stalled out. You seem to be where you can't get patients to move any further. And the question we asked ourselves is that we're just not getting it. Are people voting with their feet? Are they just doing what they want to do? So are the actions you see, when you see your employee who doesn't want to move to a generic, is that what they just want? And we need to leave them alone? Or is it like when you floss? You all know that you should be flossing, but most of you don't. But you know it's the right thing to do. And if I sent you more educational brochures to floss, would it get you to floss? Or you know, another example is you're changing your motor oil. You know you're supposed to change your motor oil in your car every 3,000 miles. Yet you don't do it. Is it because it's just too expensive? And so now the dealerships, actually, when you buy a car, they'll give you free oil changes. And you know what? Free isn't cheap enough for you. You still don't change your oil. And so we've tried to figure out, why is this? Why can't we get people this final mile? And so we sent a survey out. We used Harris Interactive, and we surveyed 2,099 people. And these people were chosen specifically for the following reason. They were taking a high-cost drug. They were taking a branded drug when there was a much cheaper generic or low-cost brand available to them. And they were getting it through the most expensive channel. They weren't even just at an inexpensive pharmacy. They were at an expensive pharmacy, and they all had this chronic condition, so they could actually even move it to mail. And we asked them, you know, are you voting with your feet? Is this where you want to be? And obviously, if they're voting with your feet, when we asked you if you're on a high-cost drug and you're voting with your feet, what you'd expect is none of them would want the generic. Because you know what? I'm making a statement. I know the value prop, I'm just not moving. Or if we asked you, do you want to move to mail? You'd expect none of them would want to move to mail, because this is what they've chosen. They all had the education, they knew what to do, or did they want to move to a lower cost pharmacy? None of them would want to do this. But this is not the results of the poll. What happened with the poll is the following. It turns out that 8 out of 10 people who are taking an expensive drug actually would like to be on the generic. They just never do it. They want to do it. They know it's important to do. They just never rises to their consciousness to do. Do you think that another educational brochure, oh, that's it. We have forgotten to send them an educational brochure. Right? It turns out that for moving to mail order, 7 out of 10 wanted to move to mail order. It wasn't that they wanted cheaper copays, they wanted to move. It just never in the course of their day rose to their consciousness, they never did it. And 2 out of 5 wanted to move to a lower cost pharmacy. The aha moment for us is, and what really brings this all together, is what you heard in the video clip. There is this intent behavior gap. People intend to do the right thing. They intend to floss. They don't. They intend to use generic drugs. They don't. And this is actually totally new vernacular to think about in the pharmacy space, and especially in the HR space. What you need to be doing, which you've probably never had this discussion in your office before, is how do you activate intent? If they already know what to do, this is why education doesn't work. They already know it. People who smoke already know smoking's a bad thing. Another brochure doesn't change that. And so the reason education has been so frustrating for you all is that's not the problem. They already have the intent. And so I'm going to end here with the following thoughts. One is we have to get back to treating patients and quit being so disease-centric. We are wasting an enormous amount of money by not treating patients, but by treating diseases. Second thing is that there are huge challenges ahead. If you don't take advantage of the relative peace we have in the pharmacy space right now, 3.6% trend, and put into place those programs that are going to make a difference, you will not be able to take advantage of biosimilars and other things when they come along. You're going to have to think of specialty as a whole patient also. You got to look at it holistically. You got to look at the medical side, the pharmacy, all as one. Because when you fragment it, you're treating it as a disease, not as a patient. The patient just doesn't give a darn which benefit they're using for their rheumatoid arthritis. They want to be treated. And then finally, and this is what I'm going to leave Kit to do, is you have to understand this intent behavior gap. But more importantly than just understanding it, you have to figure out how to activate it. You have to figure out how to activate your employees' intent. They want to do what you actually want them to do. And so I'm going to stop at this point in time, turn it over to Kit, who's going to take it a little further. I'll be happy to come back and answer questions after she's done. Thank you all very much for your attention.